Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
Everybody, and welcome to episode 168 of Linux in the Ham Shack. My name is Russ. I'm the host, K5TUX. And we also have with us tonight, Cheryl.
Hello, everyone.
Wow, she was on the ball, too.
Yep.
Great. And we also have with us, Rich, KD0RG. Oh, wait a minute. No, we don't.
I heard a chuckle.
All right, we have Bill, November Echo 4, Romeo Delta. Hey, how's it going, Bill?
Very good. How's everyone doing?
Well, they're not going to answer you, but...
I know. At least we're you doing guys great. Are doing
They'll probably well. Answer you in feedback. We'll find out.
Yes, feedback. Send feedback.
Yes, you're going to have to send feedback after this episode, because as you may have noticed already, Rich, our very brief co-host, is now gone.
Gone.
And to be replaced, at least for one episode, we'll see if it goes any further than this, by Bill. So,
oh, boy. So much to look forward to.
Right. Trial by fire.
Yeah. Tomorrow you're going to get an email going, nope, not doing it again.
Not going to happen.
Not going to do it. So we will soldier on. We're not going to go into the whole Rich thing. Maybe that will come up in a future episode. But for right now, we're gonna do episode number 168. Like nothing has changed. Well, I'm going to hit this first topic in our amateur radio segment for the evening, and it's a flash topic. And again, one of these days I'll come up with a stinger for that. But so far, nothing. Ham radio enthusiast Holly Bevan turned 100. This was actually 3 or 4 weeks ago now, but, you know, still kind of news. If you're 100, 103 weeks is not really that much different. So
that's very impressive, too.
It is rather impressive, too. I hope I get to that at some point. I'm thinking no, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
Maybe if I drink enough, I'll be petrified. That'll work, right?
It doesn't work for my brain.
It'll preserve you, right?
That's right. Yeah. I guess
all
I need to start.
All those preservatives.
Need to start drinking formaldehyde. Okay, so Margaret Holly Bevan is on the air every weekday morning by 6 a.m. She covers it all, weather, traffic reports, everything except politics and religion. Aww. Bevan, N3MB, celebrated her 100th birthday last week, and she doesn't intend to hang up her microphone anytime soon. She got a radio license to talk with her son in the Navy and joined the Anne Arundel Amateur Radio Club when very few women were involved in ham radio. So there's that. 100-year-old ham. Gotta love it.
It looked like she was active on CW2 back in the day.
I'm sure she probably was, because that might have been the only way she really could have communicated with a son in the Navy.
Yeah.
So the link to that story, if you want to read more about it, is in the show notes. But again, I don't know how much more there really is about that. We should all aspire to be 100-year-old hams.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Bill, you're up.
Oh, okay. We have a story here from the FCC. There's a petition for rulemaking, RM11767. Expert Linears America had requested that the commission issue a notice of proposed rulemaking to eliminate the 15 dB gain limitation on amplifiers for the amateur radio service. And there's been a lot of activity on the QRZ thread and the Reddit thread about this particular change. And basically, they're wanting to get away from that 15 dB limit, so lower powered radios can operate at the full 1500 watts. And there's some pretty interesting language within the filing that they had. They said that manufacturers and distributors will not be forced to needlessly cripple their amplifiers for sale in the United States, and can be a viable in an evolving and vibrant international amplifier market. Like, this is not written by an attorney, for sure.
No, it's written by an enthusiast, very clearly. It's like, I want to turn my 1-watt radio into a 1,500-watt radio. So.
I was trying to remember back to the QSO Today show, and they interviewed W6JL, Donald Huff, and he built a 40 dB gain amplifier for homebrewing. Of course, you can do that yourself. You don't need to have a 15 dB limit for homebrew. And he puts in 50 milliwatts and gets about 600 watts out.
do you know what the deal is with that as far as homebrewing being exempt from type acceptance?
Yeah, because we don't you don't sell or export your homebrewed equipment, basically. So as long as you're not a commercial operation, you can do whatever you want, basically. It's a it's an experimenter's platform.
Right, as long as the output's still under the 1500 PEP limit from the Part 97. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah, the 1500 is the limit. And it's pretty interesting. There's a lot of people going both ways on this. As always, you know, they're saying, "Oh, the CBs, you can't give this 5-watt rig 1500 watts because somebody will put it on a CB." But as many people have stated in the threads, that happens anyways. You know, there's a lot of these outside the U.S. market amplifiers that already kind of violate this rule.
Rules only are for the law-abiding. They mean nothing to the criminal. So,
I think the big issue that a lot of people are complaining about is the fact that a lot of these import amplifiers don't have a lot of filtering on them, so they end up creating a lot of extra spectral interference.
Right.
And you know, when they have that much gain, and you start with something that's pretty impure to begin with, it just gets really nasty.
Right. Lots of harmonics, lots of noise, lots of unwanted signal, etc.
If they're built appropriately. All the links are in the show notes for sure.
Yep. Sounds good. All right. And you're going to have to tackle this next one too, because I'm not really up on this. So
yeah, this is another interesting one, that story that came out last week. L&R Precision. I'm sure most people know about L&R Precision. They're a well-known manufacturer of QRP transceivers, at least recently, since the last two Daytons. They had the FX4A out. And they also make all the NFET antennas that are pretty popular with Soto activations. They have a Kickstarter campaign that I think some people are trying to verify this is really them. The Kickstarter campaign is for raising money to up their ability to supply these rigs at, I would assume, the same cost. It's not really clear. The buy-ins are very high. I think the top buy-ins, like $1,000, and you get a personalized engraved MTR-5B, which is their mountain topper radio that Steve Weber designed. And it seemed kind of weird to me to be funding a business this particular way, because this is not your normal, you know, open source or small source project. This is a commercial entity basically looking for funding that you would normally go to a bank or possibly look for investors. I see value in what they're doing, but as an investor, I would like to see a little bit of return or some type of other investment type of opportunity.
It's not like the people who deal in crowdsourcing don't actually have money. It happens. I've seen it all the time.
Yeah, it just seemed weird, you know, because I mean, it's not like they've ever been known for being a small group and stuff like that. So, you know, a lot of people are kind of just stepping in it. But, you can look at the numbers. I think they only had like $1,500 funding so far, or $1,100 of their $50,000 goal.
That sounds like my kind of Kickstarter, the ones that I start.
Yeah, we compared this to some of the other ones we'll talk about later on. It's quite a different level of economics.
I've seen a couple of friends of ours who have done Kickstarters, and they've asked for like $10,000, and they've topped like 200. It's like, you know, it's like, why can't I be in that kind of project? It's like, you'll get everything you want, and the rest of it's just going to go straight into my pocket. But
yeah, for sure.
That's pretty cool. Is this something, do you do like Soda stuff and that kind of thing? Portable operation?
Well, you know, I have stuff to do it. I have been threatening to do it. And we do a lot of hiking up here in the Beartooth Mountains. And I've been within, maybe a couple hundred feet of several peaks. So there's definitely a lot of opportunity to do it. I haven't braved it enough to lug all the gear up with me while I'm actually hiking, because I do a lot of hiking here with the Boy Scouts. So I'm always packing, you know, food and, you know, shelter and stuff like that. And squeezing the rig down is somewhat hard, because I originally started with an IC703, which is a little bit on the heavy side. So I've been trying to slowly collect something to, you know, some stuff. So I got a KX1 now. I have a really small 4,000 amp hour battery. So I'm starting to collect enough stuff that I can make it worthwhile to put it in the pack and go ahead and go up in the mountains.
Well, that sounds good. And you mentioned the KX1. Elecraft seems to be the real sweet spot for the QRPers and the portable operation, especially in sort of outlandish areas.
Oh yeah, I mean the KX3 is a great rig. That's what this LNR Precision is competing with. They have a brand new like an LD11, I believe that's the model number. It's a 163/6 small 5-watt QRP rig, and seems to have all the bells and whistles. I haven't seen any reviews specifically on it yet, but they had the LD5 out, which is a 40/15 model. A very similar platform, and that was reviewed quite well.
I'm glad we have you on the show, because you're like a wealth of information. And so far, no voice characterizations, but maybe that's drawback. we haven't sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing yet. We'll figure it out. So we also have some adventures in another Kickstarter, Kiwi SDR. This is like the Kickstarter show. Actually, we got one coming up later on too. So it's all about the fun, the crowdsourcing, the fundraising.
Yeah, no, there's just so many interesting projects that are kicking off right now. I mean, SDR, software defined radio, has just exploded in the past year or two.
I would say, because especially with the advent of the RTL SDR, which actually started out not even as an SDR, it's just like, oh well, we have these chips that tune to radio frequencies, and wow, look what we can do with them. And of course, Flex Radio has their high end SDRs and everything, but software defined radio has definitely blown up as a topic. No doubt about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's everywhere now. And this one's kind of interesting. If you're familiar with going to websdr.org and checking out some of those SDRs that they have hooked up around the world, this is kind of like that same premise. This is the device itself is a standalone BeagleBone Black and a shield on it, an RF shield for doing the RF side, receiving and whatnot with an FPGA on it. They have two options. They had the Kickstarter, went fully funded. They actually overfunded the Kickstarter. What it's unique about this thing is it has the BeagleBone Black plugs into Ethernet. It has a web server on it running this open web RX, which basically is that PAN adapter that you're familiar with looking at all these SDR projects, except for it's all on the web and it's very fast and it's pretty awesome. I mean, I started playing with that at the beginning, kind of checking it out. It seems that the antennas that they have hooked up to the three Kiwi units are not the greatest, except for AM, or they must be like right in the city or close to some serious AM stations. But they have three of them located around the globe. I believe one's in Canada, one's in New Zealand, and I can't remember where the other one is. Maybe somewhere over in Europe. It looks like a promising project. You can get the whole kit for $299, and then you just plug it into your network, and up to four users can actually hit this thing at once. So it's got enough power on its own to actually throw out four PAN adapters across the entire spectrum of the receiver, which basically goes from DC to daylight almost. I think it stops somewhere around 6 meters or something like that.
I'm sorry, I'd never heard that phrase before, but I love it.
it looks kind of cool, that they fully funded the project. They're taking additional orders that'll get in on this pre-order deal. I have nothing to do with it. I haven't even bought it, but I'm seriously looking at it just because it's kind of cool. It's got a lot of the whole open web RX is open source. You can go on GitHub, you can look at the code. Everything they're trying to do is completely open and sourced. So you can get the shield just for $199, and then the extra $100 for the BeagleBone Black.
Right, I thought BeagleBones were like $60 or something like that. Maybe I'm misremembering.
Yeah, I remember they're a little bit more expensive than the others that are in the same class.
Right. All right. Well, the link to that story will be in the show notes, and you can go to SDR.hu. That's actually the web SDR interface, right? SDR.hu.
That'll get you to basically everything. The open web RX and also all the receivers, and then the source gets you to the actual Kickstarter information.
All right. Cool. So check that out, and you can get in on that too, even though the Kickstarter is over. So. All right, so that's some amateur radio stuff for the evening, so we're going to move on to open source. And this first one was kind of cool because I've been looking at OBS Studio, which is the Open Broadcast System or something like that. 0.14 is still a zero release, but it's actually pretty powerful. I checked it out on my Mac actually today because it runs on everything. It's cross-platform. There are some bug fixes in this one. They have a full NVIDIA NVENC encoder right now in the new version, and it supports Windows, Linux, and like I just said, Mac. One thing that's not really good for me, because I was thinking about using it for doing the show with, but it's kind of geared towards video broadcasting.
Yeah, for sure.
And it has all kinds of options for video broadcasting, but it does audio as well. It performs the stream client functionality as well as doing recording and video fade and stuff like that for multiple cameras and all kinds of cool stuff. So OBS is a great product. I think when we were griping about Gary all those episodes ago, we were talking about the fact that he doesn't have to spend all the money for that broadcast software that he uses, and he can just go with OBS. But
yeah, the OBS Studio is really great. I've used the regular OBS before Studio came out. I think I had 647, like 0.647 installed on my system, and I've done several streams with two cameras and the desktop that I have up on YouTube. You can just search my call sign, NE4RD, on live stream, and you'll see some videos I made of doing the ARRL Nash sweepstakes contests. The new version is the Studio is much quicker. It's the transitions between the scenes are pretty seamless. They look good. You know, I really think this is going to be a competitor to Wirecasting and all the other commercial platforms. I mean, this is really looking awesome, and I think that NVIDIA NVENC is something that people have been waiting for with all these high-end video cards. I don't have that, but you know, I have Intel and whatever the Max Intel too, and okay, I have an AMD in my Dell, so.
Right, but are you using like commodity webcams for the video input?
Oh yeah, I just have a couple of cheap Logitechs. I mean, the video quality that I'm producing is not that great, but I was just doing it for fun and trying to see what you can do with very simple setup to stream a contest.
So you said you were streaming it. What was the service you were using to stream?
I was going straight to YouTube, so it's all on YouTube.
All right, very cool. So if you're wanting to get into some live video broadcasting, OBS Studio is definitely the way to go. And full open source. I didn't check the license, but I assume it's GPL something or other. So
yeah, I think so, or something. Something like that.
Right. Which is why it's relevant to this segment of our show. All right. We also have Opera, a new version of Opera being released. And I haven't used the Opera browser in like ages and ages and ages, but it's still out there. And it looks like they've gone with the full like Mozilla numbering scheme.
Yeah, it looks very similar with the Mozilla's in the 40s or something like that too, aren't they? 44
yeah,
or something.
44 or 42 or something. Yeah, it's way up
there. Yeah, so the developer version came out with, you know, the VPN service everybody's talking about. Got to have the VPN, you know, to get on Netflix from out of this country, and you know, you're always trying to hide your traffic. Well, the developer release came out with a free VPN service built in. You can come in from four different countries: Canada, Germany, Netherlands, or in the U.S. And, you know, I hadn't used Opera either since I loaded it on a phone that only did Java. I can't even remember. That's probably the last time I installed Opera on anything. So I've used it a little bit trying to test it out. You know, I installed it on all the platforms. It works on every platform: Mac, Linux, Windows. You know, it works really good. The ad blocker works excellent. That's built into it as well. Yeah, the VPN service was pretty good, and I saw that the other day they announced that they're going to be doubling the server capacity for that, so it's definitely something that they're going to roll out into a beta or the final release, and it could really change the game for these paid VPN services.
So they're actually offering the VPN tunnel service for free, huh?
Yeah, completely free. So, I mean, that's really what kind of drew my attention to it. I was like, yeah, Opera, who cares? You know, and I saw that. I'm like, well, that's compelling.
Well, it is compelling, but I wonder if it's one of those kind of things like the guy in the back alley with the, you know, duster full of cocaine is like, here, you get this one for free. And then when you get hooked on it, well, that's when we're really going to stick it to you.
Yeah, it could be a carrot and stick type opportunity here. But, you know, for now, enjoy it as long as it lasts.
Right, absolutely. So very cool there, and that's kind of neat news about Opera, because that's not something you even really talk about. And I think you put that in there as like open source-ish, because what is the license for Opera?
You know, I think it's mixed. They have open source components to it, and you know, a lot of it's up on GitHub. And I didn't really dig down deep enough to find out. And I kind of was like, well, I don't know where it fits in, but you know, it was so cool. I had to kind of mention it.
It says, at least in Wikipedia, that it's a freeware license and that apparently the rendering engine, which was proprietary, was dropped in favor of WebKit, which is open source. So I guess it's largely an open source project at this point.
Yeah, it's definitely WebKit driven.
All right, so this is one that you put in there and then wanted to take out, but I thought it was kind of a neat topic, the idea of the Signal client infrastructure for doing secure messaging. And so I guess we'll just throw it in here as a flash topic or whatever. So.
Yeah, it's the same. I guess it's the same people that do the WhatsApp encryption as well. This is Whisper Systems. And again, their whole project is on GitHub as well. And what they've added was the Signal Desktop Beta, which is basically a Google extension or Chrome extension. Dirty Google. Chrome extension. Chrome extension, so you can hook up your phone's Signal account to your computer, so you can send, receive, and store, you know, use the messaging service through your computer. But you can only have two linked browsers, so you'll have to pick wisely which two computers you want to put it on.
Maybe you can fool it by spoofing or something. I don't know. Since it's a security app, they're probably a little wiser to it than that, but you never know. If you need secure chat, you can always look at that, and that's the desktop client for the secure chat, because it's based on Android. I guess they're working on the iOS version. It's not technically out there yet, but if you have right. Android phones and you want to use secure messaging and stuff, you can do that. Now this is...
And it does not run by itself. You have to have the phone app. It does not operate on its own. It's not a standalone thing.
That is our open source topics for tonight, and since this... episode is a lot of you, this will be great. We'll be able to make up our minds about whether we're going to keep you or not, but
oh no.
All right, but I'm actually really curious about this. I heard many people talking about the and actually we mentioned a couple of episodes ago about the release of Xenial Zerus, I think is what it is, 1604, the new LTS of Ubuntu, and apparently you've been playing around with it, so let's hear your take.
I have probably installed every flavor of 1604 that there is, just for fun, because I enjoy pain and suffering. But so basically I have a 15.10 desktop set up for my shack right now that's all configured, CQR log, trusted SQL, FLDigi, mainly all through the PPAs, like you have to, because you're not going to get a current version. But I selected the Budgie remix because I'd seen a lot about the, you know, talk about the Budgie desktop, and it looked clean, it looked cool, it looks like it's an elementary OS killer, at least for now, because, you know, elementary OS is still back on I think 14.04, they're on the last LTS release, and you have to do a lot of kind of patching and stuff like that to get it up to some current apps, and you have to use a lot of PPAs. But so I started messing with that just on the virtual box because I don't want to blow up a working system. Yeah, I was surprised. I installed everything. I installed CQR log out of the repo at first, which I knew was a mistake. I'm sitting here trying to run it, and I'm like, yeah, it says it doesn't like MySQL 5.7. It's expecting MySQL 5.1, and I'm like, well, this doesn't make any sense. Normally, you just look for a 5X or whatever in the code, and you know, I'm trying to think about, you know, which version this could possibly be, and come to find out it's 1.90 that's in the repo, and I'm like, well, that's not going to do. And I had contacted OK2CQR on Twitter saying, you know, what's up with this? It's like, I can't even believe they even would ship that package in that repository. It's not even compatible with anything there.
Right.
So it's like, why include it? It's as soon as you install it, it just dies. It doesn't work at all. So so I added the PPA and installed MariaDB, of course, and 10.1, and they still have the outdated hamlib, which I knew that was going to be expected. I don't see that package changing anytime soon. They are up to 3.01 on hamlib, which I didn't know. They did come up a point release on that. So I did that, but in the doing of all of this, I looked at where did this Budgie come from, and I looked at Solus, and I said, well, let me try taking a look at that. And Solus is pretty interesting little distro. It kind of reminds me, geez, somewhere between probably Debian or, you know, maybe even Gentoo or something like that. But that really dates me because I used to do Gentoo back in the day.
Well, we talked about Solus a few episodes ago, yeah. And it's kind of an interesting desktop. It's a super glossy, real flashy looking desktop, yeah. the whole Budgie thing. And that is the thing that's being integrated, or it has a respin that's available for the new Ubuntu. But the only thing that was kind of lacking in Solus was its package support, because they kind of redid everything from the ground up. So you have to sort of be aware of that if you want to try it. But for what they've done, it's actually really nice.
What really impressed me on the VM, it boots in like 2 seconds. I've actually got that kind of work, and you know, I had to do, you know, a little bit of compiling and learning about, you know, what packages I need to start compiling with, because you have to get like a system.dvel package, and you got to get, you know, your auto make, your auto conf, and all that good stuff. But yeah, it reminded me of the good old days when it was fun to build stuff.
It's still fun to build stuff. It's like going back to your roots and not having everything sort of done for you. It's nice that way.
Yeah. So the whole thing that was pushing me to do this was I wanted to try out Cloud Shack, and I had seen that online. I didn't put the link in here, but I'm sure you can just Google Cloud Shack. And it basically runs off of Node.js and presents you a, you know, web interface to your local shack. And I was kind of thinking about it too when you were talking about writing your, I think you mentioned at one of the other shows about writing PHP bindings to rig control and stuff like that.
Right.
So this thing is basically the Java script side of that. Unfortunately, I could not find a single Linux installation that actually would install that without error. So I wasn't able to try it out. I did try it out on the Windows computer, but which worked. I was highly disappointed in that.
So was the problem?
I want to give it some more look. I want to give a deeper look at that, because that kind of looks pretty slick.
Was the problem you were having with Cloud Shack or with Node?
It was Node's ability to install it and compile it. It seems like there's some stuff missing. And I haven't debugged it enough to figure out what's missing, and I'm not familiar enough with Node to really, you know, dig it apart and figure out what I'm missing. But it definitely is not happy on pretty much any Node system I've installed it on.
Well, all right, that's unfortunate, because Cloud Shack is one of the topics we came up with. There were 3 or 4 different web-based loggers like LaHalo and stuff like that we talked about a little bit ago, and Cloud Shack was on the radar, but no one has actually up till now had a chance to even try and test it out. And apparently even those of us who have tried and tested it out haven't got very far. So
yeah. So I'm gonna keep on plugging at that. You know, I still haven't made my decision on what to do about changing my platform. So I've downloaded, you know, even more since then. I even have Linux Mint on here, 17.3. I put you know, Jesse on here just to see what the straight Debian flavor feels like, and I was really surprised that those CQR log packages are really, really old. I think Jesse has like 1.72 in the repository, and Linux Mint has like 1.83 in the repository.
Well, it's almost like anything.
Definitely not getting any love from that particular area.
Right, but I mean, you know how Debian is. As soon as it's released, it's outdated, and that's not a Debian problem. That's just an evolution problem. So
yeah, so I mean, it's just as easy. You just go grab the deb off the site and put it in there. It just seems that, you know, at this point, we should be able to roll these out a little bit better. I don't know.
You'd think so, but then there are package maintainers that don't necessarily keep up with the times, and there's always feeling retro cool and downloading the tarball and building it yourself.
Oh, yeah, I've done that too. That's what I'm doing on the Solus install.
So what about TR-Log?
I'm part of the Big Sky contest group. We just started a club here in Montana, and our club president is N9RV, Pat. He's the editor over at the National Contest Journal, and he was talking about single operator 2 radio setups, and he told me, I use Linux for my logging. I'm like, really? So what do you use? And he says, well, I use TR-Log. And I had seen it, you know, TR-Log is a fairly old application from, you know, the Windows days when you had CT Logger and a bunch of other programs and stuff like that. But so this is a fork of the original TR-Log just for Linux. And they've done a lot of customization to handle an SO2R setup, specifically with one of the fancy SO2R boxes that I think the Yankee Clipper Contest Club put out. It's a pretty decent logger for contests. And I know I'd mentioned the other day, we were I can't remember where we were when we were talking about contest loggers, and I was like, oh yeah, N1MM+, and you're like, no, you need a Linux logger. <You know? laughs> And I was like, oh, okay. So yeah, it reminded me that Pat told me about the TR log, so I messed around with that, and that works really well. I'm getting ready to do a contest next weekend that I may try using that on. I have to check and see if it does Rovers that well, because we have the 7QP here next week.
All right, sounds good. So it seems like overall you've had a fairly good experience with the new version. What are your final thoughts or take on it?
Yeah, the final take is I think I'm just going to sit on 1510 for a little bit and do some more experimenting. I really like the looks of some of these other distros and some of these other windowing environments. So I'm going to see how far I get with Solus and maybe look a little bit deeper into Linux Mint.
Have you used Linux Mint before?
No, I haven't.
Wow, you haven't even touched Linux Mint. That's interesting. You'll have a good experience with that, I think.
Most of what I've done has always been like Ubuntu or Gentoo. And basically, I used Gentoo until it burned me so bad in production that I went to Ubuntu. And this would be back in the the version 8 days.
So all the Gentoo people are going to be screaming, Arch, you should be using Arch.
Yeah, exactly. And I tried installing Arch. I do have a working virtual machine with Arch, but I didn't get very far on it because I got distracted with other downloads. So I am looking at that, and I'm working on that as well.
All right. So you have like 17 computers dedicated to nothing but just experimenting with new OSs, I'm sure.
I have a really beefy laptop with a virtual box with about 20 different machines on it right
yes,
now.
Yes. Yep. I know how that works. It's a great way to experiment, no doubt about it.
Yeah. So much easier. I don't like that. Or you can snapshot it before you decide to break it.
Yeah. Always make sure to do that before you break it, though. That's the important bit.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so we got one more thing that I came across based on some feedback that we're going to talk about a little bit later, but this is the idea of DMR, which is digital mobile radio, and this is something we haven't really talked about, but I'm not even sure if it's a new technology, but it is a technology. I assume it's been around a little while. It's digital mobile radio. It's a widely adopted telecommunication standard for professional mobile radio voice and data communications, and it's an open standard, which is very cool. Developed in the European Telecommunications Standards Institute, or ETSI, which is a not-for-profit. They produce globally applicable standards for information and communications technologies, including fixed, mobile, radio, converged, broadcast, and internet. The main features of DMR include reliable and immediate individual group and broadcast calls, as well as mobile data services and applications. And one of the principal benefits of DMR is that it uses TDMA, which is a great way to do multiple path communication over a single stream. And the bandwidth on this is only 12.5 kilohertz. And it's, of course, a digital method of communication. So quality is good, even in a narrow bandwidth scenario. And I found a couple of resources out there that if you've never heard of DMR and you kind of wanted to get into it, there's actually an online learning course. It's a 4-lesson course. Yeah, I guess that's what I want to say. over at Tate Radio Academy. And the link to that will be in the show notes. And then if you're not really familiar with DMR at all, great introductory PDF, which will, of course, be linked in the show notes as well. And this came up because it was a comment on episode 166, where we were talking with the DMRX, comments were thrown out about the technology being based on AMBI and proprietary and all of that, and Codec 2 and how there are open standards for encoding and decoding voice transmission data and all that. This DMR thing does the same kind of thing, but it's all open standard and a lot of it is open source as well. And
I think most of these digital standards all use that ABM chip to at least do the encryption side of that thing. Because like D-Star uses it. I think even the D-Star is technically an open product as well. It's just that one part of the puzzle that is the part that everybody points to. But I don't think it's any different, at least the way I've had it explained to me, with the Moto Turbo or the DMR or the Fusion and stuff like that. Almost all the manufacturers are using the exact same chip.
Right, they're using the open standards, but the actual encoding mechanism is done by a proprietary chip. But right. It doesn't necessarily have to be, and that's kind of the important thing.
Or the codec, the codec 2 is all just software driven, right?
Right, but you can of course embed it in a chip if you wanted to. It's just someone has to put the technology out there. But I mean, it's an open standard, so you can deploy it however you like.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Have you tried it on HF?
I've used FreeDV. which is the codec 2 based, I assume, DMR or similar to DMR.
Yeah.
So I've not tried DMR itself. Have you?
No, not DMR. I've done the free DV, but I've seen definitely a lot of videos on DMR and all the various trials on HF of using digital.
Yeah, so free DV is actually kind of interesting. The thing that confused me the most about it was kind of the waterfall. I mean, the way it works is great, and as long as you're tuned to a frequency where you know someone who's operating free DV is going to be, you're fine.
Yeah.
But it's not like you can use it in the same way you use FL-Digi to scope out an inbound signal. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, it's definitely a little confusing. I mean, that's why they have a set frequency on it, each band for testing that out. I don't know if it's gotten widespread enough that it's QRMing folks and stuff like that. But it's definitely an interesting and unique way to transport your signal. And hopefully you can get a little bit more distance out of it, like the digital modes get you.
Yeah, I've only had a few QSOs on free DV, but the ones I've had have actually been really good. But again, it's kind of a hit or miss thing because it's not like with like WSPR or WSJT where the idea is you have propagation over weak signal. You really have to have a good, strong path to your endpoints there, because as soon as you lose any kind of signal clarity, the channel goes away and you lose decode. So unlike with an analog signal, you might be able to pick out what's being said when the band sort of drops out and stuff. That doesn't happen with free DV because as soon as sync is lost, it's just gone.
Yeah, I guess that's true, yeah.
But, as long as your signal is reasonably good, it works great. And having nice digital quality audio over HF is pretty nice, even though the bandwidth is kind of narrow and everything sounds a little bit robotic. But I mean, it's there and the quality is decent. So
yeah, it's passable.
Sorry, David, it's only passable.
I'll get some more traction. They have a couple of devices too that you can plug into your radio and use too. I've seen those advertised. So I mean, it's kind of getting to the hardware side. Anyway, it's just a matter of getting it implemented either in a chip or having a manufacturer buy into it and start deploying radios with it. Maybe we'll see some of these Chinese handy talkies or other rigs out of the Asian market come with some of the stuff built in.
Right. Well, they did come out with the SM1000, which is kind of like free DV in a box. So, I mean, and that sort of thing is out there. I know the initial setup for free DV can be a little confusing to some people because you generally have to have two audio cards. You have to have the inbound processor and then the outbound processor, and there the two shall meet. But if you have the box, the SM1000 does everything for you. So
yeah, most people have a signal link, right? So
or something.
A second sound card.
Right. Absolutely. I mean, it can be any two sound cards. It can be the one in your computer and the external one. If you have a Tiger. A signal link or a Tigertronics. That's what I was trying to say.
Or
like a Microham or something like that. Yeah. Anything that has a sound card in it will work. So,
yeah. And all those fancier newer rigs with the built-in sound cards will also work.
Yep.
So try it out. It's awesome.
And there's a lot of chit chat in the chat room, which is great. 'Cause that's what a chat room is for. Petra was talking about, Fusion, the Yaesu Fusion being impressive. No difference between analog FM and digital fusion, even on narrowband. Yaesu a little late to the game. Well, okay, but better late than never, I suppose. If you know of a digital repeater with fusion, you gotta try it.
I don't have any of the gear, or I don't think there's even a repeater out here in Montana.
Well, there's got to be one somewhere.
Well, we have analog, and I believe there's a D-Star in town, but I haven't tried any of that stuff.
Well, I know I was mentioning in the last episode that my old ham radio club, which is in Arista County, Maine, which is in the middle of nowhere, they just got a DR1X. I'm going to try and get them to hook up with the Northwest Digital product so they can do D-Star and Fusion and all that stuff. That'd be great.
Yeah, that sounds great.
And then I'll have to tell them what D-Star and Fusion are. Because they bought in on the repeater, and because it was cheap and everything, and Yaesu was just trying to give them away basically. But I'm not sure they're really using it. I'm pretty sure they're just using analog FM. So
oh yeah, that's the deal. They get the repeater for like $500,
right?
Yeah, I've heard about that. I was just listening to something where they have a couple things you can plug into it. I guess that's what you're talking about, that you can extend it to D-Star and a couple other items.
Right. That was the Northwest Digital Radio thing we talked about. Yep, in episode 166. So
yeah, cool.
The one that wasn't jittery.
The one that wasn't jittery. Yeah, right. 166. I think I had a note here about 166 on here. What the heck did I write down? Oh, when you guys were talking about opt directory.
Oh, the opt directory, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And you'd mentioned that you could just wipe away the opt directory when you want to redo your stuff. And
well,
I was like, wait, doesn't Google put all their stuff there? Maybe that's why you wanted to get rid of that opt directory. On every distro, I think they use the opt directory for that.
I don't know. I installed Google Chrome on my Debian system, and it's in user bin. So
really? Yep. Really? Yeah, it does definitely stuff some stuff there, because I have it on a couple systems here, and it's in the opt directory.
Okay, so there's a caveat there. You should be a little careful about wiping out your opt directory entirely, but...
Yeah. Yeah, when I do compiling in there, I always do the prefix slash opt slash, you know, like hamlib. So I know it's isolated to a directory, and then I'll actually add the path into my bash RC, and that way I can wipe that stuff out whenever I want.
Well, generally speaking, though, the prefix excludes the directory that includes the software package itself. So if you specify opt, it usually goes into hamlib or cqrlog or whatever the thing is. It kind of appends that by default. It doesn't just go into opt.
Right, yeah, it makes the user whatever, you know, the bin, the source, and
well, it's like if I'm saying if you're doing cqrlog, for example, and you do prefix equals opt, it's not going to be an opt bin. It's going to be an opt cqrlog bin. It prepends the name of the software package, generally speaking.
I was experiencing a couple different things, but who knows? I'll have to check that out.
Well, and there are different prefix options, because in a lot of cases there's like prefix, and then there's like libdir, lib prefix, and stuff like that. So you have to be kind of careful about that too. Again, that was a simple tutorial, not an in-depth, all-inclusive tutorial. So yeah, your mileage may vary.
Yeah, yeah. Be careful.
Yeah, be careful out there, kids.
Yeah, I remember the Sun OS boxes were all, everything was an opt that you installed outside of the Sun package system.
Right. And it's still a useful diversion technique.
Yeah,
Instead of user local, yeah. I mean, they both work. It's just, you know, be careful out there.
It's time for some music, isn't
it? Yeah, I think it's time for some music. So this one actually came by way of Matthew, Kilo Delta 9 Bravo Whiskey Juliet, heard this song on the Sunday Morning Linux review. And said we should play it over here, and I was like, so I took a listen to it, and it's actually really good. It's rock, sort of hard rock
instrumental,
yeah, which is nice. Sometimes you don't need vocals.
Yeah, no, it was really, I enjoyed it. I'm sure everybody else will like it too.
Right, so this is a track called It's Me. The gentleman's name is Roma Agishev. It came from the album Alibi. This actually was released about 6 years ago, but it's very good. Runs about 4 minutes. And I'm going to cue it up here. We'll play it, and then we'll do some other stuff. We'll be right back. Well, it kind of went away quick, but there you go. Oh, yeah. No, not the next song. That one's probably pretty good, too.
Save that one for next week.
Yeah, we'll do that one next week or something. Anyway, It's Me by Roma Agishev or something like that. I'm sure I'm butchering my Russian, from the album Alibi back in 2010. So thanks, Matthew, for that suggestion, and thanks to the Sunday Morning Linux Review for playing that one. So that's cool. I've never actually listened to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. I guess I need to do that.
I don't think I've listened to that one either. I've got multiple ones on my pod device here, but
that one not being it.
I was like, I listen to a lot of podcasts, but don't see that one on here. We'll have to add it.
Yep, definitely so. All right, so moving on, we've got some announcements and some feedback. And the first one is, of course, our generosity campaign for Hamvention 2016. This is the 2nd of May as we're recording. Hamvention is coming up like real soon now. That would be in 18 days or so. If you have any mind at all to send some money to us so we can be at the Dayton Hamvention, we would really appreciate it if you would do that. And like real soon now, because Hamvention is like real soon now. I guess I can just go ahead and let this out of the bag now. We will be there regardless.
Yay!
Yeah. Oh, wow. Hey, Rich. Welcome back. but we worked with the folks at Hamvention. They were able to give us a good deal on an inside booth. So we will be in East Hall 625, EH625. We will be there. And for those of you who have been to Hamvention before, you'll know that we'll be right across from the Scoot Around booth. So all those people picking up their scooters will be right there across from them.
I heard your buddy's going to be there.
My buddy? Who's my buddy?
Adam Curry.
Oh, that. You know what? You know what I think of Adam Curry? I didn't even know his call sign was. So.
Yeah. He used to have like a KFSLN or something like
that.
Yeah.
I remember that one. I didn't know he actually went to K5ACC.
Yeah, I think he turned in for a vanity just, I don't know, not too long ago. But yeah, I heard on the show this weekend that he's thinking about definitely going. So
he's thinking about definitely going. So which of those is true?
He'll probably go. You know, he's kind of
he'll probably be in Audio Alley, though, along with all the other folks like Bob Heil and all them. So
yeah, well, keep an eye out for him. You can set him straight.
That would be an interesting talk, I think.
I think he'd appreciate a good conversation.
I would appreciate a good conversation. Anyway, I'm sure he doesn't remember 4 years ago or whatever it was that happened. But anyway, yeah, that's pretty cool. So anyway, if you've got a few bucks in your pocket, we could certainly use it. Even though we've already we got enough in donations to actually secure the booth and everything. But of course, there are a lot more expenses involved with going to Hamvention than just the booth rent. So. Anything you can do would be great. The link to the generosity campaign will be in the show notes, and the generosity campaign will, of course, be running right up until Hamvention. So you found this one. Since we were doing an entire Kickstarter episode, you can talk about the Lime SDR as well, which was actually kind of cool. I checked this one out.
Yeah, the Lime SDR, they're already up to almost $120,000 of a $500,000 goal. Wow, that's huge.
It is huge.
Yeah, this is another SDR, but it's a little different. It's here's what they say. It's a low cost, open source, apps enabled software defined radio platform. This thing can be set up to send and receive, you know, UMTS, LTE, GSM, LoRa, Bluetooth, Zigbee, RFID, and digital broadcasting. So I'm assuming you can set up fake phone tower for the thing, and start cracking people's phones. So this is a really great. You can get into it for, I believe their entry level price is $299, and it looked kind of interesting because it's fairly new, and it's another one of these products with a really high end FPGA doing all the decode and coding, and they're talking about it's the first SDR to integrate with Snappy Ubuntu Core. It looks like the project has a lot of traction. They're 24% funded, and they got 49 days left.
So in a final bit of commentary, we have a comment from Bruce, VE2GZI, on episode number 166. And this was the comment that sort of led to my reference of DMR. He said, well, if you use MMDVM board, you can turn your DR1X into a DMR or a D-Star repeater. And yeah, both open source hardware and software. The link to that is mmdvm.blogspot.ca. And that MMDVM is multi-mode digital voice modem available, and it integrates with the DR1X. And that is truly open, both hardware and software. So there are lots of options out there for doing digital voice across multiple platforms, and especially with the new Yaesu DR1X. They have got a total coup going on with that repeater project, where they're just like loading the entire ham radio community up with these DR1X repeaters. They're going to be everywhere. And since they integrate with everything, Yaesu has definitely made a great play for themselves in the digital voice market. So,
yeah, I think ICOM had a similar campaign going on when they were trying to push more D-Star out, because I believe that's how our club ended up with a D-Star repeater in town.
Kluwick in the chat room is asking about, has anybody looked at DV4 Mini? I have not.
I have not either. I think I've seen something on it, but I couldn't recall.
It's a USB stick, D-Star DMR, C4FM, and P25. Requires a PC with Windows 7, 8.1, 10, or Linux.
Can turn any computer into a hotspot.
Yeah, Linux on a PC or an ARM computer like a Raspberry, Banana Pi, or Odroid. We need to look at this more and talk about it later.
The webpage that I'm looking at says the DV4 Mini 2-meter VHF 149. VHF USB stick containing two M data transceiver works with D-Star, DMR, Fusion, APCO25, DPMR, and other digital modes which are based on GMSK to FSK or 4FSK.
Well, the DV4 Mini folks will be there at Dayton, according to Kluwick. Oh, very good.
If you want the VHF version, you can get it for about $165, and if you want the UHF version, you can get it for about $145.
Excellent.
All right, very cool. Lots of great information there that we didn't even know was coming out. But thanks to Bruce for the feedback, VE2GZI. And by the way, the MMDVM thing that he mentioned is his project. He's the one that creates it. So
awesome.
So he's got self-interest in that. So anyway, there you go. There's a plug for you. All right, and I see that we can move on now, because there is actually a recipe in Cheryl's Recipe Corner.
The recipe I picked today is because I decorate cakes by day, and Russ has recently turned on me. He wants no more cake, he wants no more buttercream, or anything else being served to him for any reason at any time.
Right.
Right. But we are big fans of Napoleons. There's only one place that we know of locally that has them, and it's iffy if we can ever get one. So I found this recipe for Napoleons. It's a quick and easy recipe. It requires some puff pastry that you can buy in the freezer department, some instant pudding, some milk, some frozen whipped topping, otherwise known as Cool Whip in the U.S., some powdered sugar or confectioner's sugar, and some unsweetened cocoa that you mix into that confectioner's sugar if you want a chocolate drizzle on it. Bake your puff pastry, mix up the pudding. Once the pastry is done and cool, put some pudding in it, and poof, you have Napoleons. And I guarantee you'll be very happy, because this is something that looks very fancy, but doesn't take very long. So,
And we don't have cake on the show, but we do have a social media roundup. So
do we?
We do.
All right.
Let's do it. And okay. I can't wait till you get to the last one.
I think I've already figured out the last one. So. This week, for donations and subscriptions, we have Jonas Rulo, Jeremy Hall, Michael Connolly, Harrison Kyle, Scott Pettigrew, Bob Yerke, Paul Griffith, Ronald Ikey, Johnny Kinsey, Brian Smith, John Spriggs, Robert Halliday, Ben Schramm, Michael Aiello, John Clark, Rob Branch Dash, Edward Donnelly, Donald Gever, Alan Wilson, Steven Sainer, Dylan Engel, Jason Marinero, Ronald Nesler, James Blocker, Doug Redder, Michael Lasky, Darren King, Petro Kartsakis, and he's in the chat room. I'm sure he's...
He's already said you do a wonderful job.
I do a wonderful job. Okay, great. Okay. Donna Farron, Gary Horlick, and some guy named Bill.
I don't know who that is.
I have no idea who that is. It's just, I don't know. We got a donation from some guy named Bill. So, all right.
Yeah, I hate when those people don't leave last names.
Yeah, it's a naughty mouse.
Oh, there you go. For Facebook, we have Torsten Herrenberg and Robert Thomas. For Google+, we have Torsten Herrenberg. On Twitter,
Twitter. Yeah.
Twitter.
Twitter's like Flickr and Grindr or something. Yeah.
And Tweaker.
Tweaker. Yeah. There you go.
Great. On Twitter, we have Morgan261, WWE, FAN, DW1, Ham Radio 360, HB.
Yeah, HB9. Ham Radio 360, that's the new Kale. That's Faux Time, that's what that's become. Right. So there you go.
HB9EHO.
We were listened to by someone who has an HB9 call. So real quick, where is HB9?
Honduras or something, isn't it?
Come on, where are my peeps? Who's going to tell me where HB9 is before I Google it?
Well, hurry up and Google it, okay?
Switzerland.
Switzerland, all right. And you were totally wrong.
you know, I was thinking of like Hotel Charlie or something like right. that.
All right, cool.
Journeyman 1959, Repair Techie 1, Print Ol Nop T. Probably.
Yeah, I have no idea. Yeah, it sounds idea. Indian to me. Print Ol Nop T.
Yeah, and it's probably not, but who knows. And VF Banatoly.
I'm going to guess that's actually VFB Anatoly. That sounds right. kind of like a Russian thing, but
right.
I'm just guessing because I could guessing. Be completely
yeah, I,
wrong.
Yeah. I never guess on Twitter because you know what my handle is. So.
Right.
Anyway, nobody joined us on YouTube, and Wally Coker joined us on our mailing list, and we didn't have merchandise sales.
Boo. Was that a boo or a moo?
Okay.
It's a M-E-W.
Petro says, hi, Mom. I'm pretty sure she's not listening, Petro. And if she is, wow, we have to say hi to her next time.
My kind of mom.
Yeah, no joke. There you go.
That means I can push the outro button, which has a sound sort of like that.
Wow.
Yeah, amazing. And I can read this stuff. It says, become an LHS ambassador. Visit the website for upcoming events and information on how you can represent Linux in the Ham Shop at an upcoming Ham Fest or Linux Fest near you. We also love feedback. You can email us at info@lhspodcast.info, comment on an episode on the website, post on Google+, Facebook, or Twitter, or leave a voicemail at 1-909-LHS-SHOW. That's 1-909-547-7469. You can visit our IRC channel, Octothorpe LHS Podcast on Freenode, and subscribe to us on our mailing list. Show merchandise from coffee mugs to t-shirts can be purchased at cafepress.com/LHS Podcast. You can also help out the show by clicking on the sponsored ads in the right-hand column of the homepage. Listen to us every other Monday night live at 8 o'clock Central Time. That's Tuesday at 0100 Zulu time in the winter and 0200 Zulu time in the summer. I think I actually have that backwards, but anyway, you'll figure it out. Our recording schedule and countdown timer to the next episode are on the website, and our website is lhspodcast.info for everything you ever wanted to know about the show. Thank you to all of our listeners live, quasi-live, past, present, and future. We appreciate each and every one of you. So, thanks for tuning in to episode number 168 of the Linux in the Ham Shack podcast. I'm Russ, K5TUX, and that's Cheryl across the desk from me.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
And we are in Studio 3D in Southwest Missouri, and from all the way out in Montana, we have Bill, NE4RD.
Have a good evening.
And we will catch you all in a couple of weeks' time. Bye-bye now.
done lost my place.